This is Studio B Live, and I'm David Burns, and I'm trying to talk real softly because Sherry's on the phone taking a lot of Package B orders today, and so let's just listen in to Sherry taking some orders for just a second.
But those are the easiest ones to do, and you put that entrance feeder, you just slip it in the bottom super, you put a quart jar on it, and yeah, that's the easiest thing to do, so... Okay. Well. No, that's okay. Just keep them. So you need two entrance feeders. Okay. Was it recently that you ordered? Okay.
Well, as you can hear, it's been a very busy morning for us here, and it's about 11:30 in the morning, and we have taken so many Package B orders today, and so many Queen orders, so many Nooks, and we appreciate everyone calling in and taking care of this in a timely manner, getting those packages and Queens and Nooks early in the year. That's just the prudent thing to do. And it's just a lot of fun talking to beekeepers this morning and hearing what people are doing and meeting new people on the phone. And those of you that are still needing to call in, we encourage you to do that as soon as possible. And take care of the bee business while you still got some time, while the weather's still kind of cold outside. You can begin making plans to get all that together. Don't wait to the last minute and try to pull something off. So we'll listen in for a few more phone calls that Sherry's taken, and might encourage some of you to continue to call in and get those Package Bs and Queens and Nooks ordered up.
All right, well, just call us back if you've got any questions. Okay, thanks, Steve. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, we're listening in on you, Sherry, here on Studio B Live and all the...
You didn't get that guy's credit card number, did you?
No, I actually turned it off. No, I didn't get, all we heard was Steve, so we didn't get any other information from Steve. So, well, what's it been like this morning?
Well, I still haven't combed my hair yet, and I haven't done anything with my face. I did get my deodorant on, luckily, but other than that, I still look the same as I did when I woke up this morning, if that tells you anything.
I felt sorry for you at breakfast. I mean, you were trying to get a piece of toast about 8:15, and every time you walked over to the toaster and did something to your toast, the phone would ring again. So I finally took a few calls so you could have some breakfast. But it's been fun, hasn't it, talking to beekeepers from all over the country and taking orders. And the phone has been ringing about as often as it can, I think, with probably people calling, getting a few busy signals. Somebody emailed me and said, I'm trying to call in, but it's busy. And it's like, keep trying. So it's been enjoyable, but has it been wearing you out? Do you need to take a break? Because really, it's quite fun just sitting here watching you and listening.
It's fun watching me?
Yeah, just sitting here and watching you take orders and listening.
Don't you need to go out and build some beehives for?
Oh, yeah, but it's lunch hour now. I gotta eat lunch.
You've taken a 2-hour lunch break today.
Yeah, it's more fun to watch you than to grind up wood out there.
Yeah. Well, lots of people probably think that, but it's really fun talking to the folks, you know, that we talked to last year. And, oh, the baby's up. He's just walking out the door.
Yeah.
But it's really fun, you know, for folks to call you know, I remember them from last year, and they're talking about how their bees are doing and they want more, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. So we'll maybe listen to you take another phone call or two and see how it goes. That's a lot of fun.
Long Lane Honeybee Farms. You sure can. What zip code are you in? 044. You are in zone 044. You are in zone 6. So in zone 6, a 3-pound package with a marked queen, and this includes shipping, is $88. Right. Uh-huh. 88 and 88.
There's the phone again, but I'll give you a break, Sherry. I'll take it. Long Lane Honeybee Farms, this is David. Hey, how are you doing? Hello, friend. I'm your host, David Burns, and I want to thank you for tuning in to Studio B Live today, brought to you by our honeybee farm, which is Long Lane Honeybee Farms. And this is an operation of my wife, Sherry, and I, and our children. Our family enjoys beekeeping so much that we have to just continue to pester you with a podcast every day talking about beekeeping. And so we hope you enjoy tuning in and just sharing with our family the experiences we enjoy with beekeeping. We had a very busy day today. This was our first day to actually begin taking orders in 2009 for the packages of bees that we ship out and our Nooks and our Queens. We began answering the phone today, and we want to thank all of our customers today for calling in and placing your orders. Your loyalty and your friendship to our business and your support really does mean a lot, and we don't take that lightly. We respect the fact that you trust us and you depend on us for your beekeeping needs. And I just want to thank you for keeping those phones busy today. And you just about plumb wore out Sherry answering that telephone. We took so many orders today and look forward to taking more tomorrow. So thank you. And it's encouraging to see so many first timers into beekeeping. That's good to hear too. So be sure and call in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and here on out to place those orders of your package of bees, your hive material, or maybe some of your protective clothing, smokers, hive tool, whatever you need. Give us a call. We'll take care of your beekeeping needs. Our telephone number is 217-427-2678. Well, today I had a chance to kind of observe my daughter Corrie a few times doing her some studies, some independent studies on beekeeping, and I kind of was looking over her shoulder and seeing what she was studying about bees, and seems like she was doing a lot of study today about diseases in bees. And so I sat down with Corrie and we just talked a little bit in front of the microphone about diseases. And I don't want to discourage you, because I know sometimes you know, it doesn't take much for us to become concerned if we have a health problem, and it doesn't take much for us to be concerned if our bees have a health problem. Now, I don't want you to become overly alarmed about us talking about diseases in the hive, because, you know, it really doesn't happen that much. For the most part, bees do well, and the healthier and stronger the hive is, the healthier it is. They're able to keep diseases out of the hive, but like every living thing, like every livestock, there can be problems, and we want to talk about a few of those today to help you become better informed so you can identify any kind of diseases that you see in the hive and know what kind of action to take. So let's just get into our discussion with Corrie, and we'll talk about diseases in the hive. Well, when it comes to beekeeping, one of the things that we really never want to see, never want to talk about, never want to hear anybody talk about, and that's problems with the beehive. Problems such as pests or diseases. And we're pretty quick to kind of gloss over any problems and say, well, I don't think that's a problem. I don't think that's a pest. I don't think that's a disease. We can kind of put up with pests. You know, like mites. We're not too bothered when we see mites. We're a little more bothered if we see small hive beetle. They can actually do significant damage. Seems like more so, I think, than a mite can, especially to the honey crop. And, you know, we have, you know, if you see a mouse in the hive, it doesn't seem to be as serious. If you've got other pests like all little critters like possums or maybe skunks getting into your hive, you can deal with all that. But what about disease? It's kind of a serious thing when you find a disease in your hive. Now, someone asked me the other day, they said, do I really have to worry about diseases in my hive? And I said, well, you know what? I've been keeping bees a long time, and I've never had American foul brewed. I've never seen anything that really has alarmed me. I see in the spring maybe just an occasional touch. One year I saw occasional touch in one hive of chalk brood. It cleared up very quick once the season kind of got rolling. And last year I had some hives in a wet area, and I did see what appeared to be just a case of European foul brood. But those things were so isolated or not very serious, and they usually take care of themselves. That's a lot different than American foul brood. Now, Cree has joined me this evening, and Cree spent a large part of the day studying about American foul brood, and I found that to be interesting that you would do that. And I thought we would kind of just share with our listeners to help them identify maybe some of the diseases that they might see in the hive and how to identify the diseases. It's pretty easy. I mean, it's not 100% fail-proof. You can always send your samples off to bee labs and have them scientifically evaluated and get back a decent report. But there are some easy ways. Here is the most feared and dreaded disease of all beekeepers. And the abbreviation, Cree, is what?
AFB.
All right, AFB. You want to guess what that stands for? It stands for American foul brood. And American foul brood has always been a concern among beekeepers forever, from the beginning of time, I guess, when bees were being kept by beekeepers. Excuse me, beekeepers were worried about American foul brood. In early years of beekeeping, it did take its toll on a lot of beehives. Now, here in my state of Illinois, American foul brood is taken very seriously. And if a hive in Illinois is identified as having American foul brood, there's only one option, only one treatment. And Cree, what is the treatment?
Burn it all.
That's too bad, isn't it? You have to burn the entire hive. I'm talking about everything. Hives, frames, bottom board, inner cover, top cover. It's just burned up.
And the reason is because there are spores that can be spread through food and like other hives, and bees taking things from that hive, you know, robbing and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, that's right. And in your research today, did you come across how long those spores can live?
They can live a very long time, and they can actually remain dormant for like 50 years.
Yeah, I've heard even 80 years. But, you know, 50 years, that means that if you buy used equipment from someone who didn't even maybe know they had American foul brood, those spores are in that in the comb or maybe somehow in the hive box, and you say, hey, I'm getting a good deal, you know. Farmer John down the road, he's giving me all this free comb and boxes and all. And you take it home, and it was maybe 30 years ago, and you start using it again and provide an environment for those spores to what we call vegetate, come alive and kind of grow. Well, then you have American foul brood, and not only is it a problem for you, but your bees are flying around, like Cree said, spreading it. Well, Cree, when you look into a hive, what would a beekeeper, what would make them suspicious enough to think that they might have American foul brood?
Spotty brood, mm-hmm. And that's sunken and has holes in it and just really dark in color, and just, you can tell it would just look bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And it you kind of look at it and go, ooh,
yeah, like,
something's wrong.
Like a rotting maybe, or just going bad or something.
Yeah, that's a good indication. It's got spotty brood. Now, spotty brood, just because you have spotty brood doesn't mean you have American foul brood, because sometimes that's just the order of the of the cells hatching. You know, you can have holes because a bee emerged a few seconds ago and you got an empty cell. But you'll know because there are just a lot of open cells among the brood. And like Cree mentioned, there's what we call perforated or holes in the brood, like it's torn open or rotted at the top. Sunken, the brood is, you know, concaved in, that the sealed top, you know, of the brood cell is caved in. And another thing, it can look wet and greasy and kind of a dark color. And there's an easy way for a beekeeper to test to see if it is American foulbrood. And what's the test procedure, Cree?
You take a toothpick or even end of a match or something and stick it in a brood cell. And if there's residue, I guess, that comes after on that toothpick or whatever, in like a ropey form, then that's a good indication.
Yeah, that's right. It says you pull it out, it follows you out. Probably the consistency of taffy or, you know, a thick toothpaste substance. So the larva itself is what we're talking about. When you stick your toothpick into a sealed brood cap and you kind of sweep around the toothpick so you can kind of, you know, stir up the larva or the pupa. And then when you pull it out, nothing should follow, or it should not follow very far. Let's put it that way. And if it does, if you've ever seen it, it will follow a good inch or more. The larva is ropey enough to follow that toothpick that far out. And at that point, you know, oh my, I've got American foulbrood. And it's always a good idea at that time to call your inspector, tell him you're concerned about this, and he or she can come and make a better assessment. Because there's another brood disease that's very similar to American foulbrood. And what is the name? Or let's start with the abbreviation. What's the abbreviation of the other brood disease, Cree?
EFB.
And what does the E stand for?
European.
All right. Does that mean that just people in Europe have it? No, it doesn't. It's in America, isn't it? European foulbrood. And European foulbrood is a brood disease. Both of these are bacteria, caused by bacteria. And European foulbrood is more noticed in the spring of the year. And I feel that it's more indicative of hives that are kept in very moist climates. That seems to me that the spring is wet. And if your hives are in wet areas, that it could cause the bacteria to grow more. I don't know if that's true, but it seems like it to me. And so what do you think about symptoms of European foulbrood, Cree? You got some symptoms you can tell us about European foulbrood?
The larva is kind of twisted.
Okay.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, the larva is twisted in the cell so that it looks like, you know, a larva that should be sitting on the bottom in a curled position, but its head is raised. And so it's pretty common to see in European foulbrood that the larva's head is raised. What else?
The brood can, I guess it can look a lot like AFB. The brood can be discolored and sunken and have holes in it too, and have and be really scattered like AFB.
Okay, so that's going to confuse people now because now they think, oh my goodness, it looks like American foulbrood or the European foulbrood, because European foulbrood is not as serious at all compared to American foulbrood. You don't have to burn European foulbrood. Typically, all you have to do is requeen if you have European foulbrood, and with a good nectar flow and a new queen, the hive will kind of come out of that and be okay. So that's why we're kind of saying it's real important to know the difference between the two. One is a death sentence. American foulbrood is a goner. There's nothing you can do. No antibiotics, no medicine, no nothing. They're gone. You got to burn them. And burning is important so that you don't spread it. But with the European foulbrood, you can begin to take some action to right that hive. Now, there is one. What about the rope test? If you do the rope test on the European foulbrood, what will happen?
It won't be ropey.
Okay. Now, it can be more ropey than typical healthy brood, but it won't nearly be as ropey. You're not going to pull it out an inch like you are American fowl brood. Okay, so with European fowl brood, like we mentioned, the larva is twisted on the bottom of their cells, and they're kind of inverted like a corkscrew. And I've seen that occasionally in the spring. And with European fowl brood, many larvae die in their cells, and they're not even capped. They just die in their cell. You're not going to see any sunken caps like you would have with American fowl brood. And when you try the toothpick or the match test that Cree talked about, there won't be any ropey trail that follows the toothpick or the match. But it can have an odor. It certainly won't be as foul as American fowl brood, but there can be an odor. And by the way, Cree, I don't know if you've ever smelt an odors from the hive. There are several odors that people are alarmed by. In the fall, there's a flower in our area here in Illinois called aster and goldenrod. And boy, they can make a real funny smell from the hive. And the first time I had that smell when my bees started collecting that kind of nectar, I called Dr. Keith Delaplane up at the University of Georgia, and I said, "My hive smells funny," and he was asking me what it smelled like. I was trying to describe it, you know, and he was like, "Oh, well, that's just the fall, you know, goldenrod, aster. That's just what it smells like." It's kind of funny. The bees take that through the winter, that honey, the stored honey, and you don't smell it, of course, in the winter because it's sealed. But in the spring, they start opening up all those cells of honey that they stored, the goldenrod and aster honey, and in the spring, it starts smelling like that again. Because they're opening all those cells up, and you know they're eating it and using it to get going again, but that's a good smell compared to American fowl brood. American fowl brood kind of smells like if you've ever gone into a chicken coop, you know, a real bad smelling chicken coop, kind of that real ammonia type rotting smell. It's bad enough where you know that is not a good smell. Do you have a description of the smell?
Rotting fish, maybe.
Oh, okay. That leaves me out because I don't think I've ever smelled rotting fish. But maybe I have. You know, rotting fish is a good fertilizer, by the way. I know a lot of people put that under tomato plants and they grow great tomatoes, rotting fish. So, yeah, it's a terrible smell.
And we were talking about another brood disease, sac brood, which we found to be pretty similar to European fowl brood.
To me, the difference is that in European fowl brood, you don't see such a sac of the larva. As you know, the sac brood means sac because the larva does actually take on a sac-like substance, doesn't it?
Yeah, like and the skin of the larva is really like watery and not dry, or you know.
Now, is that in European or sac brood where it's wet or watery?
Sac brood.
Oh, okay. And what happens when you have sac brood? What do you do then? Now, sac brood is a viral disease of the brood. It's kind of like us getting a common cold. It's not a real serious threat to the hive. The larvae begin to turn yellow to dark brown, and you can pull them out pretty easily from their cells. And they, like Cree said, they are kind of like filled like with a water sac. Excuse me, I think I'm getting a European fowl brood in my throat. All this talk about bacteria, and I got a cough. It's not as serious because it does, you know, when you have sac brood, it does begin to kind of work itself out in time. And, of course, I know this sounds redundant, but with European fowl brood and with sac brood, requeening always seems like it brings the hive back to a good health. You know, you want to keep that as an option. It always has maybe a spare queen around so you can deal with it. Another, another fungal disease among the brood is what we call chalk brood. I've seen that one time. A couple of years ago, I was splitting some hives early in the spring, and I made a nook box. And I had I didn't have enough nurse bees to take care of the amount of brood that I put in that box. And because of that, there wasn't enough bees to kind of keep an orderly house. And just for maybe a week, I would occasionally see, you know, a handful of mummies at the bottom, at the bottom board. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how else to describe it, but they're just dried up little mummified larvae that the bees will carry out. But in time, it clears up pretty good. No medications required with chalk brood. The colony usually begins to get an upper hand on it. Replacing the queen is always an option. It seems like it can spread. I mean, it can spread from high to high, but it doesn't. It's not as serious as certainly some of the other diseases.
Another mummified type brood disease is stone brood, and mm-hmm. the difference with chalk brood and stone brood is really the names. Chalk brood is chalky, and
stone brood is stony.
Yeah, it's a lot harder.
Yeah, chalk brood, I guess you can kind of take it and twist it in your fingers and it's like a piece mm-hmm. of chalk, but stone brood is a lot harder. Okay. You think we should depress the folks anymore with these terrible stories of diseases in the beehive? Nobody will want to be a beekeeper anymore.
Well, I always hear a lot of people talking a lot about
excuse me. Hey, Seth.
Yeah.
Can you come here for a minute? Here is our master carpenter, Seth. And how did it go out in the shop today?
Pretty good. I built about 7 bottom boards, 7 top covers, and 7 inner covers today.
And how many hours did it take you to do that?
Just a couple.
Oh, that's good. And what was the quality of wood like? All the good wood that I cut, all the routing joints, the dado cuts, how'd I do?
Oh, it was really good. It's been the best I've seen yet.
There we go. All right. What are you going to do tomorrow?
The same thing, I guess.
Okay. All right. Back to Curie now. I'm sorry I interrupted you. That news flash from the hive production area.
Well, everyone seems to deal a lot with wax moths.
Wax moth. Yeah, the greater wax moth. Somebody called Sherry today, and they were like, I got some boxes, but they have these sergeant stripe on the boxes, these little indentation stripes inside the box. And if you've never had wax moth, you don't know what I'm talking about, but if you've had wax moth, you know the sign, because the larva of the greater wax moth, kind of like a cocoon, they kind of burrow down into the wood, not real deep, but deep enough to leave a pretty good crater in the wood, in the hive, the frames. I've got boxes out there from other people that I've bought that have that in it. And it is a serious problem to some degree because, am I going to steal your thunder here, Cree? Because a greater wax moth infestation means one thing. Your hive was too weak. A greater wax moth keeps its nose out of a healthy hive. In fact, the way I look at a greater wax moth, they are God's remedy to rotting wax. And they go in and devour any kind of wax that the bees leave behind to prevent American foul brood, European foul brood, stone brood, chalk brood. They go in there and just eat it up. Now, they leave a mess in the process of eating things up. And you can, I think of all the things that depresses beekeepers the most, it's when they see a frame that has been devoured by a greater wax moth. They just want to cry. It looks like a disaster zone. You just want to burn everything. You want to burn your suit. You want to melt down your hive tool. You want to crawl in a hole somewhere. It's embarrassing. It's terrible. But in all reality, it's not that bad. You can reuse those frames. The frames are okay. It's not really an infectious thing, so to speak. And here's what I do. I do see this occasionally when I try to nurse a real weak hive along, And then in the fall, I give up. The wax moths move in. Wax moths like hot temperatures, and they'll grow. They'll kind of infest hives when it's really hot. But the times I've seen it, I'm never bothered by it. We live in Illinois, and it gets cold in Illinois. Cold weather kills wax moth eggs. And sometimes I'll even take frames and actually put them in my deep freeze out there with your pizzas and the ice cream curry, and I'll freeze them for a couple of days. And so if there's any eggs on the frames in the wax, then a couple of days in the freezer or a couple of days in Illinois outside when it gets cold, they're gone. You don't have to worry about them anymore.
But the eggs don't harm the bees.
The eggs don't harm the bees, but if you were to use these infected frames, say you bought a package and now you're going to use some frames that you didn't know had the eggs in it, well, it could be that the eggs could hatch before the hive got big enough to defend itself against these hatching greater wax moths. So, you know, in a big hive, you can put an infected frame in a big hive, and man, they'll annihilate it. They'll eat the eggs. They'll throw them out. There won't be a problem. I've actually opened up hives before, strong hives, and saw the greater wax moth larva being carried out by the bees. They'll just grab it and carry it out. But so you do see it in a hive, but they keep it under control. That's why a strong hive is the answer to all of these things we're talking about. I believe a strong hive will keep the spore count down of American foulbrood, the fungal problems of, you know, sack brood, chalk brood, the bacteria is down, and you don't have as many problems. In fact, that's one of the things we're going to be testing for in our queens this year, Cree, is the liquid nitrogen test of queens that are hygienic. That means the daughters are able to clean out these kind of infected diseases or brood problems, take it outside the hive so it doesn't have a chance to grow and infect the hive. So that's greater wax moth. I've talked a lot about greater wax moth in my bee lessons, too. I've got a whole lesson on greater wax moth and how you get rid of it, how you freeze them out, and what kind of chemicals that some beekeepers use. In the old days, they used wax or mothballs. It's a very, very dangerous chemical that you should not use around honey and beeswax. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Carrie? All right. You know, it seems I'm intrigued that a almost 18-year-old girl would sit on the couch today and read about American foulbrood. What prompted you to this interest?
Oh, I just think I need to know more about bees because I live on a bee farm. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. You know, I found this other book that's really neat. Oh, let me step over here and get it. You'll like this one, Curry. You know, it's really like a... it's almost like a college-level bee course, though, and I don't have a clue who this guy is. Peter, and Kevin, K-E-V-A-N, and it's called Bees, Biology, and Management. And it's a softback book, a little over an inch thick, and it's from Cambridge, Ontario, Canada. And it is a very interesting book. It's got a lot of good graphics in it. It's got a huge table of content, but there are some very interesting things in here. One of the things that I studied from this book is when I was studying the temperature of the inside of the hive during the winter time, and he has a great section. Let me see if I can find that real quick. A great section on how the hive stays warm in the winter time and what temperature the cluster is, and there's some interesting facts. If I can just thumb through and find that magic picture in my flash photo memory here, I'll be able to tell you about it, because he was talking about, now here we go. Now this is Celsius, and I'm not good at converting on the fly from Celsius to Fahrenheit, but the temperature of the cluster, it's going to be in the 90s Fahrenheit. And as the temperature gets colder outside, the bees get into a tighter cluster. And I kind of make a summary of what I read in his section here. But he says that as the temperature warms up to about 40 degrees in the wintertime, the older bees in the cluster actually break cluster. The cluster doesn't break up, but they leave the cluster. They go over to where the honey is stored, if it's, you know, away from the cluster, tear open the honey. They actually carry the honey back over to and inside the cluster and feed the cluster of bees with the honey that they're bringing in. That's why you need temperatures to be 40 outside so that the bees inside the cluster can kind of break cluster enough to walk around. But he has a neat section, a lot of different, a lot of good information about the bee cluster and the temperature of the cluster. Hey, Crean, I want to tell you too and tell our listeners another thing that, you know, I'm testing for is I'm testing for humidity in a hive, how much humidity is in a hive. And today I purchased this device. It's a real interesting scientific device. It's about the size of something of size you would think that if I said it, you would know what I mean. It's probably the size of a honey mustard container from Arby's. You love Arby's, don't you? It's about the size of a honey mustard container. But it's hooked to a USB wire. And it comes, you know, we have some hives just outside of the lab there. So it's got a 16-foot cable on it. But it's hooked to a computer. It's got the software built into it that every so many seconds it records the humidity, the dew point, the temperature, and, you know, automatically makes graphs and monitors the change of humidity. So this will give me an edge on determining how much humidity is in a hive during the wintertime and help me determine if some of the things I'm doing and experimenting with are reducing the humidity. Because now all I've got to use are those little Walmart little thermometers that's got the humidity on it, and they don't record anything, you know. So this would be a neat little device to try out. Here's Sherry. Hi, Sherry. Sherry is plumb wore out today from taking so many package B orders, and I think she's going to get refreshed and go for it again tomorrow, aren't you? Did everything go good, Sherry? Did you come up with any, hit any bumps in the road or any suggestions when people call in tomorrow?
No, everything went real smooth, I thought.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Well, anything else? She's trying to sneak away to the bed, aren't you?
I'm so tired.
Okay, you can go off work now. What's so hard about answering the phone? I was out there building hives all day. Okie dokie, Cree. Well, there's a lot of other interesting things that we could talk about regarding bees. Oh, you know, I was listening to a song today. It was an oldie song. What was the name of it? I think it's Yellow Taxi. Does that ring a bell with you, Cree?
Mm-mm.
I think the lady's first name was Janet. Janet somebody. I don't think it was Janice.
No.
But I'm going to have to look up the words to it. Have you ever heard of the song Yellow Taxi, Sherry?
No.
But there was a line in there. I was out in the shop working, so this may just be a stupid thing to say because it may not be what I heard. But it sounds like she was saying there was a line in there that she had. I'm going to look this up, but it said something about DDT. You know, that was a poisonous spray that they used in the 60s. And then she said something about a honeybee. I thought she, you know, how you're working and there's a lot of noise. You can hear something that's not really said. But it sounded like she said something like they were spraying DDT, but they didn't realize what it would do to a honeybee. And if that's not what she said, I've just wasted the last 3 or 4 minutes here babbling on. And I'm sure there's some listener out there whose favorite song was Yellow Taxi, and they know exactly who sung it, and some hippie out there loves that song and knows whether or not the honeybees mentioned, but I want to find out. But there are a lot of problems with toxicities out there that affect the bees, and we do have to be careful. Hey, you know, regarding Let's move off of pests and diseases and talk about some pesticides. Pesticides aren't good for bees at all. They'll kill them. That's what it means. It kills pests. Insecticide, they kill insects. But there are herbicides that aren't that much of a problem. Like, let's take, for example, Roundup. Roundup is sprayed on grass and weeds to kill the, you know, different kind of vegetation that you don't want around your home. And I have not seen any at all, any ill effects of Roundup on bees, because Roundup is it's really pretty benign of a substance. It stops the growth of particular types like broadleaves and things, but never seen it affect a honeybee at all, not at all. But it is good that we really stay with our farmers and encourage them to keep beekeepers well informed about the different pesticides and insecticides they'll be spraying, so beekeepers can make a good judgment on how to protect their bees from those dangerous chemicals that can kill a hive. A sign that your hive has been affected by some sort of insecticide or pesticide spray is that you go to your hive and you notice there's a lot of dead bees in the front. A lot of dead bees laying out on the grass, a lot of dead bees on the bottom board. I mean, an unusual amount of bees that are just laying out in front of your hive. Then you know they tangled with some sort of chemical, and it's rapidly just killing and destroying the hive. The dangerous chemical of, it's called 7, and, you know, it's an insecticide, a pesticide, and in a powdered form, it's really dangerous to take it and just pour it over an apple tree or melon patch or something, because as a powder, the bee thinks it's pollen. And the bee will go and gather up this white poison, take it back to the hive, pack it in cells, and feed it to their young, and just annihilate the whole hive. So there's a liquid 7, and it is much more, I mean, it's the better of two evils, I guess, because, you know, the bee can't really tangle with the liquid that much, especially if it's not sprayed on a flower, if it's just sprayed on the green part of a plant. But if you have to spray 7, put 7 on, spray the liquid, spray it late at night. And by the time morning comes around, the most dangerous parts of the chemical have evaporated or worked their way into or around the plant more, where the bee won't tangle with it. So those things are very important. People can do these things to help save the honeybee by not killing them with unnecessary spraying of these harsh chemicals. Well, Karee, thanks for joining us. Have you got anything tomorrow that you're looking forward to studying about honeybees?
I have more different kind of diseases. I'm kind of interested in that, so I can, you know, detect different ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully you won't have any hands-on experience from any of our hives. But it is good to have that knowledge under your belt. So, you know, every time I'm out in a hive, I know exactly what to look for to identify diseases, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was so happy last year. I spent the entire year with that, with the exception of a couple of hives that I thought may have had a European file brood early on in the spring. I did not see one problem with any of our 50 hives last year. I never saw mite infestation. I never saw a single small hive beetle. I never saw any kind of brood disease. I didn't see unhealthy queens. I didn't see deformed wing virus. I didn't see that. Didn't see any kind of paralysis in the bees. I just saw healthy bees every time I opened up those boxes. And boy, that was encouraging. So it is good to know, though, because you are always kind of watching for these things, because sometimes you can get an early you can early detect it and start making some changes and get rid of it. You've been listening to Monday's edition of Studio Bee Live, brought to you by Long Lane Honeybee Farms. From David and Sherry Burns, we want to say thank you for joining us, and Karee Burns. If you'd like to contact us, our number is 217-427-2678. Our website is honeybeesonline.com, honeybeesonline.com. And again, our telephone number is 217-427-2678. If you need to order a package of bees, call that number. If you need to order some beehives to put those bees in, or some bee suits or smokers, give us a call. We'll take care of all your beekeeping needs. The number again, 217-427-2678. Or drop by honeybeesonline.com. And we invite you to tune in again tomorrow as we continue to look into beekeeping. And we know that you'll enjoy more and more broadcasts to come this week. And we'll give you more information about beekeeping and the joys of keeping bees. So we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Remember until then to behave yourself.